Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, Middle East Forum board member serving as chair. Today's guest is Mr. Lee Smith, senior editor at the Weekly Standard and author of the critically acclaimed book, The Strong Horse, Power, Politics, and the Clash of Arab Civilizations. Our topic is the ISIS-Iran conundrum. Last night's Republican debate touched on our topic, highlighting the dual threats posed by Sunni ISIS and Shiite Iran, whose shared objective is to weaken the West, differing only in their tactics. The conundrum is that any successful coalition strategy to defeat ISIS in Syria will result in a win-win for Iran, furthering their nuclear ambitions. We'll now hear from our speaker, Lee Smith. Lee?
Good afternoon. Thank you very much, Marilyn. Thank you to the Middle East Forum and to Daniel Pipes, and also thank all of you for listening this afternoon. I intend not to speak too long, between 10 to 15 minutes, and I'm very interested in entertaining your questions and speaking more directly with you after. I just want to, however, run down and lay out how I'm thinking about this. One of the subjects I've been coming back to again and again over the last several years now, both at the Weekly Standard and at Tablet Magazine, where I write a regular column on the Middle East and Washington foreign policy, is that I think that by and large we have incorrectly prioritized our threat level here. I believe that the Islamic Republic of Iran is a much more serious threat to U.S. Regional interests and to U.S. allies than the Islamic State is, and the primary reason for that is simply that Iran is a state with the resources of a state. This is not to dismiss at all the very serious threat that ISIS poses to the United States and our allies, of course, not just in the region, but also now as we see in Europe as well. So again, it's not to dismiss this. I just believe that we need to prioritize our threats. Iran is the main issue, and this is not just because of the nuclear weapons program. This is also because of Iran's larger regional project, where it now controls, as it says, four Arab capitals, as the Iranian officials like to boast, Beirut, Damascus, Baghdad, and Sana'a. And it has the Iranian access includes, of course, not just Hezbollah and various Iraqi militias inside Iraqi Shia militias, but is now also expanded to include Russia, where Vladimir Putin has escalated inside of Syria to protect one of Iran's key allies. In fact, it's one Arab ally, the regime of Bashar al-Assad. That's why I think it's actually very important to, again, not just to look at Iran's nuclear weapons program, but to look at its expansionist project. And right now, the key to that is focusing on Syria. And again, to come back to prioritizing threats, both the administration, you may have heard that yesterday John Kerry said that the United States is not interested in regime change in Syria, and this is partly because of Russian diplomatic pressure, but it also has to do with the White House has made a choice that Bashar al-Assad is preferable to what comes after, and maybe I'll get around to that shortly. Maybe we can also answer that in questions. Senator Ted Cruz, who is running for the Republican nomination for president, has also said that he believes that Bashar al-Assad is preferable to whatever comes after. Senator Cruz actually manages to confuse issues a little bit when he said that this is modeled after the opinion of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has also said, according to Senator Cruz, that Israel does not have a dog in this fight. Well, as a matter of fact, since long before the White House, Israeli officials have been quite public about the need for Assad to step aside. That includes both the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, it included then Defense Minister Ehud Barak, and included the then President Shimon Peres. If there is any reason that the Prime Minister of Israel has changed his tune somewhat, and we know he has during his last trip to Washington, where he was careful to keep counsel The reason for this is because of the Russian escalation. For Prime Minister Netanyahu to say, no, we clearly think that the Iranian access is worse. We clearly think Assad is worse. We don't like ISIS, but we think Assad is worse and he has to go. That would put him publicly at odds with Putin. And that's one thing that the Israelis don't want to do right now. However, if you look at the way it's really shaking out on the ground, the Israelis have not struck any Sunni rebel units. ISIS is not on the border of Israel. It's certainly a concern, but right now they've prioritized their threats, and their main threat is the Iranian access. That's why they continue, that's why Israeli strikes continue to target Iranian weapons convoys going to Hezbollah. So no matter what Senator Cruz says, or no matter what it looks like from certain angles, the fact is the Israelis have prioritized their threats, and it's the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Iranian access. It's not ISIS right now. I want to discuss for a minute. What the Islamic State actually is, and what I see to be the problems. The Islamic State is made up of several components. One of these components includes former regime elements belonging to Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist regime in Iraq. These include former intelligence and army officers. It also includes Arab tribes spreading across the Syrian desert from Syria to Iraq. As a matter of fact, if you look at what many people describe as the map of the so-called caliphate, what you'll see is this is actually a map of Arab tribal confederations that have been there long before the advent of Islam. So what we're calling a caliphate, or what people are describing as a caliphate again, a lot of this has to do with Arab tribes. Now, why have Arab tribes enlisted with Saddam's people, and why have they enlisted with these foreign fighters from both the region, if we're looking at Chechens and Saudis, Tunisians, Moroccans, a whole bunch of foreign fighters from the region, as well as foreign fighters from Europe. And I think one of the most important components to look at ISIS is the foreign fighters coming from Europe, because this seems to me something very new. The rest of it is not very new. If we're looking again at Arab tribes and we're looking at Saddam's people, we know how to strip ISIS of its prestige, and we know how to knock ISIS back some, because this is effectively what the surge was, what the Bush administration's surge was. Starting, I believe, in 2005, late 2005, was that it was necessary to get the Arab tribes on board, and this was the Sunni awakening. The Sunni awakening was pointed at the foreign fighters, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and this is who took them on. Now, this is what the administration is trying to do as well. The Obama administration is trying to get various Sunni tribes to pick up arms again and go after the foreign fighters, both the foreign fighters from the region and the foreign fighters from Europe and the former regime elements from Saddam Hussein's regime. The reason they have enlisted with ISIS, or the reason that they believe that they are better off aligning themselves with ISIS, is because of the Iranian security apparatus that is extending right now from Lebanon to Iraq. The Sunnis feel up against the wall. The Sunnis feel that they are cornered. They feel the United States has switched sides. The United States is working with the Iranians and the Iranian security apparatus, and they feel they have no protection. Why should they pick up and go against ISIS when they feel that they're being pushed by the Iranians? So it's not just a matter of prioritizing threats, that the Islamic Republic of Iran is more dangerous than the Islamic State. The fact is, there is going to be no way to defeat the Islamic State unless Iran is knocked back down to size first. Iran and its allies have to be knocked back down to size, and that includes getting rid of Bashar al-Assad, toppling Assad, and getting him out of Syria as soon as possible. Another thing is, when we talk about, and the reason that I said that ISIS is also a threat, or what's happening, why there is a threat as well, not just in the region, but also in Europe. If we look at the refugee crisis that's coming from Syria, This is not an Islamic State problem. This is not what Islamic State has done. The majority of those refugees are Sunni men. These are young Sunni men of fighting age. And the reason they're leaving, the reason they're fleeing in numbers, is because of the campaign of sectarian cleansing that Assad is waging against Syrian Sunnis. There is going to be no way to stem that refugee, there may be different ways to keep them out of Europe, but there's not going to be any way to keep them from going to Turkey or further destabilizing Lebanon, further destabilizing Jordan until Assad comes down. The administration on the left has refused to build a buffer zone or a no-fly zone, which is going to be that much more difficult to do now with the Russians having escalated in Syria. I think that there's not going to be any way within the next year to change the administration's policy, even if the administration wanted to turn it around, and I believe it does not. I believe the priority for the administration was to strike a nuclear weapons agreement with Iran, and that's what it has, and it's not going to tinker with any of the other machinery in the region. But the reason I think it's important to discuss this, the reason I think it's important to describe it, is because whoever comes to the White House next, whether it's a Democratic or Republican administration, is going to have to deal with a very serious problem. If this administration has ignored and neglected this, and in some ways helped provoke it, insofar that it's backed the Iranians to the hilt around the region, and this is certainly how the Sunnis perceive it, then the next administration is going to have a very serious problem to deal with, because this crisis is spreading out of the Middle East, and it's spreading to Europe, and there is no doubt that it's going to affect the American homeland further. But the way to stop it, the way to knock ISIS down to size, is by prioritizing, by going after the Iranians first, by knocking the Iranians down to size. ISIS will be a much more manageable problem at that point. Right now, insofar as the United States keeps backing the Iranians, and the Iranians keep pressing their expansionist project around the region, that's just throwing more Sunnis into the column of the Islamic State. So I'm going to conclude right there. My talk, as scattered as it may be, and I'll swing back around to other issues, I hope, with your various questions.
Okay, so now you can ask questions. The question and answer period will now begin, and we invite your participation. Please note that when there are no questions in the queue, the moderator will ask a question. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to identify yourself when your line has been unmuted, please do so. Please remember, if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you're selected to ask your question. Again, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. All right, so we do have some callers in the queue. We'll take the first question. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear that your line is unmuted.
Hi, Lee. It's Nina Rosenwald. Merry Christmas. That was a wonderful briefing. I wanted to
ask... Thank you, Nina.
Problem often comes, like, okay, you remove Bashar al-Assad, then who the hell takes his place?
Yeah, I know a lot of people believe that what happens is that ISIS and Jabhat Nusra stand to gain the most once Assad comes down. I'd say the first thing that we have to look at is Assad has not been able to control the country for nearly 5 years since the uprising began. Even with Iran, Assad has not to control the country. Now, even with the Russian escalation, the Iranian Axis is not able to control the country. So I think the notion that ISIS somehow winds up controlling all of Syria doesn't make sense to me. I think that there's no...
It'll break up.
Pardon me?
It might...
Yeah, I think
the country will break up.
Yeah, I think in lots of ways we see scattered fighting, and it's going to be the Sunnis who are doing most of the fighting. Lots of different Sunni groups are going to be fighting in lots of different places, and some of these people are going to be, Salafist groups that are very dangerous and that are a real problem. Others are going to be groups which I think that the next administration should find ways to empower and should find ways to work with. I mean, this is something that I've been saying for nearly 4.5 years now. I think it's up to a superpower. Up to a superpower to pick winners and to make that happen. This is something the administration has not done. I certainly think it's something that will be possible for the next administration to do, and I think that's something to look at. But again, I think the idea that ISIS, I think the idea that ISIS stands most to gain, or that ISIS will pick up after Assad, it doesn't make any sense. Again, Assad has not been able to control the country. How is ISIS going to control the country? There's going to be lots of fighting around that country. I'm not saying it's going to be a pretty sight at all, but the idea that it's going to be controlled, it's going to be controlled by ISIS, that I think is not accurate.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Nina.
Okay, so we'll go to our next caller. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear that your line is unmuted.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark Hess. I thought that was a great presentation, Lee, I guess, because I agree with it. But
Thanks, I appreciate that.
So here's my question. I think, as you pointed out, the ISIS is sucking up all the news, and every people, even the candidates, portray that as the big threat. And the smart guys like you point out that the bigger, more long-lasting threats are Iran, Russia, China. And with Iran, if that's the immediate threat, we have the threat of them not just in the striving for regional hegemony and in the four Arab capitals, as you pointed out, but their nuclear program also. So my question is this. Can the United States address the Iran threat comprehensively and also address the Russia and China threats? Or do we have to partner with Russia and or China to cut Iran down to size? In the world in 2015, do we have to trade Ukraine or Taiwan for the ability to defang Iran? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for your question. It's interesting you bring up a number of different issues there, a number of different very interesting questions. In a sense, the conversation that we're having, is right now a combination of hypothetical and futuristic, right? Because what's happening right now, none of this is going to change within the next year. It's going to be up to the next administration to make its own priorities and to figure out what's most important to it and where it needs to win and where it needs to push back. I think it's very important to push back against the Russians. I don't think that Ukraine, this is, not being a Ukraine expert, but from my perspective, the place to push back is not in Ukraine against Russia. I think that Syria is, because I think that Syria is important, as it puts not only Russia, but it puts Iran on the border of a number of American allies, starting with Israel, next Jordan, next Turkey, as extremely problematic as Erdogan is and as Erdogan's Turkey is. Turkey is still nonetheless a NATO member, and Turkey can nonetheless still be extremely useful for an administration that knows how to use it. I think that probably at this point, the next administration is going to have to move very slowly, very carefully, and prioritize and figure out what's important, if it needs to push back on Russia in some places and make deals with Russia in other places. Again, I don't see the deal that we make with them over Ukraine. Their argument would be like, what's the deal? We already have Ukraine. What are you going to give us? And what do you expect us to give you in Syria when you have no leverage on us right now? So there's going to be a way that there's going to have to be a way for the next administration to gather momentum, to gather leverage. And again, I think the first thing is going to be prioritized. See what's most important. Again, I think the Iranian nuclear weapons program is an enormous deal. I think there's another problem, too, with Iran, and that's the expansionist project throughout the Middle East, from the Eastern Mediterranean to the Persian Gulf. It's a problem for American national interest in the region. It's a problem for American allies. And the other thing we're starting to see now is it is Iran's war across the region, in Iraq, in Syria, and in Lebanon, that is sending refugees to Europe and that is destabilizing the continent, a major American trading partner. This is Iran's doing. Now, we see who's going there, and we see the different problems. But it is Iran's war that is sending refugees to Europe. So I think that these are the priorities, and these are the things that the next administration is going to have to think about. How does that?
Okay. Well, that's good. We'll go to our next caller. And, caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when your line is unmuted.
Hi, Lee. This is Janet Derflinger. Actually, Nina asked my question about what replaces Assad. And I guess you sort of answered it, but it seems like, you know, it seems like what replaces Assad is still a mess.
Yeah. Look, let me, it's an important thing, and people are talking about this a lot. And again, Senator Cruz has talked about this. I think they're wrong. Look, the main reason that Iran perceives Syria as a vital national interest, for one reason, the Assad regime means one thing to the Iranians, right? I mean, they like, why not? They like having a strong position there. If they can control that, if they can manage to control that, fine. They're happy with that. The key reason that Syria, that the Assad regime matters to the Iranians is Assad is the supply line to Hezbollah. The Iranians fear that whatever configuration of a regime comes after it, certainly if it's a Sunni regime, if it's some other configuration of an Alawite regime, the Iranians clearly fear that they will lose that supply line to Hezbollah and that Hezbollah will be stranded. There will be no, it will be much more difficult for them to arm Hezbollah. So this in itself, not just for the United States, but for our allies, certainly primarily for Israel, but there are other allies as well that are threatened by Hezbollah. So this in itself, when people say, well, what comes after? I think it's very important to look right now at what do we have, right? Looking at worst-case scenarios, looking at the hairiest, angriest, scariest Salafi jihadis who are capable of replacing Hezbollah, capable of replacing Assad. Let's not forget who the people are in power now. Let's not forget about IRGC Quds Force. Let's not forget about Qasem Soleimani. Let's not forget about the continual war that Hezbollah is waging against Israel and against American allies, including against the United States. Let's not forget about what Assad has done throughout the region. Let's not forget about the amount of the number of Americans that Assad helped kill in Iraq. Remember, Damascus International Airport was the transit point for Salafi jihadi fighters to go into Iraq and kill Americans. So by all means, let's look at what happens if Assad comes down. But let's not forget what this regime is. Let's not compare it and imagine that these people are somehow, that these people are somehow rather secular and they're somehow rather better than the worst Salafi jihadis that come after. Believe me, Hezbollah is as bad as it gets. The Iranian regime is as bad as it gets. These people are not friends of the United States. They're not friends of our allies. They have our allies up against it all around the region. It's a priority for the United States to at least push back on Iran and shrink Iran down to size. It's affecting our very position in the region. The Middle East is what it is. There's always going to be some sort of conflict. The United States is always going to have some sort of problem in the Middle East because that's what the Middle East is. There's always going to be a problem, always. But the main problem right now is the Iranian access. Let's keep that in mind. It's so, from my perspective, it's the key American interest right now still. Even after the nuclear deal is signed, it's not pushing the Iranians back down to size, not making them any easier to get along with. It's making them more ambitious and making them more dangerous.
Lee, this is Larry Holland, and I also really appreciate your comments.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Good. My question is, given that the White House certainly shows no interest in doing anything intelligent regarding Iran. Given the Republican control of Congress, is there the ability for them to basically prick the nuclear deal by deeming Iranian activity to be breach of agreement, barring sanctions that go them to basically blow everything up.
Yeah, certainly a lot of people would like to. I mean, there are various Democrats right now, both in the House and in the Senate, who are pointing most recently to the Iranians tested a missile, ballistic missile, I guess it was 2 weeks ago. And so there's certainly lots of people who are pointing that way. Hey, look, it looks like they're violating a UN Security Council resolution. What's going on here? We're trusting these guys with a deal? So, yeah, there are lots of people who are pointing to this, but it's not once the president decided. I mean, we all saw what happened. Once the president decided that this was going to be his signature foreign policy initiative, he pulled out all the stops. Some very, very nasty things they did, right? Some very ugly things they did.
But there's not the ability to do an end run around what he did, because if Congress passed the resolution,
there are many people here in Washington, as you can imagine, who are hoping there's some way to do that, some way to engineer something like that. I myself don't see it. I just don't see it right now. But that's why I think that we ought to be looking toward the next administration. Who are the different people? Again, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, who are the different people who seem to understand the issues, who seem to be capable of formulating certain answers and make our own voices known, say, here's what we think, here's what we believe, here are the important things. I think we should be looking ahead over the next year, and keep our fingers crossed, but certainly be very clear-headed about what we think the issues are and how we want to articulate them ourselves, and how we want our candidates to articulate them too. But yeah, right now I just don't see anything on the Hill tearing up the Iran deal.
Concur. And then with regard to Iran and Israel, what are your comments regarding the possibility of Israeli action against the Iranian nuclear infrastructure?
I don't know. That would be hard. I don't have any better idea than you do. But again, what I was saying before, the Iranian nuclear weapons program is not the only deal. Not the only issue. Look, the Iranians keep sending important weapons across that border. The Israelis are stopping most of the shipments, but not all of them. Look, Hezbollah has 100,000 missiles right now pointed at Israeli cities. That, to me, right now, is a very, very significant threat. I would imagine that Israeli officials, Israeli decision-makers are thinking, look, the Iranian nuclear weapons program is a big deal, and we're dealing with it in different ways. But right now, the main threat facing us is all of these Hezbollah missiles and rockets. That's a big deal. So I think right now, that's why I keep saying it's not just the nuclear weapons program. It's Iran's larger regional project, which right now includes 100,000 missiles on Israel's border.
Lee, this is Marilyn Stern. We have about four more questions in the queue and wanted to know if you can stay a few minutes longer, because
sure.
It's now 4:30.
Sure. Sure. I'll try to keep my answer shorter here.
That's all right. We're getting a lot out of this. Bonnie, can you introduce the next caller?
Certainly. So we'll go to our next caller. If you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear your line is unmuted.
Hi, this is Dennis Gura. You've addressed the issue of the Sunni tribes. Could you address the issue of all the other kind of secondary forces at play, Kurds, Saudis, the Egyptians, the mess in Libya, and how this, my concern, in addition to everything else, is how this could blow up into outside of the region in much uglier ways for very many more people, simply because of the mess of alliances that exist at this point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to talk about Libya or Egypt. I mean, Egypt doesn't really have much of a role right now in Syria. You know, let's just stay with Syria and Iran and right now. We've gotten very sloppy in some ways talking about the Kurds. To talk about the Kurds, it's a useless analytical category, right? There's a number of different Kurds. There's Kurdistan Regional Government, which is pro-U.S., which has been very helpful to the United States in the past, and which is a very useful American ally. The Obama administration is working with Kurdish institutions that are not as helpful. The PYD is the Syrian branch of the Kurdistan Workers' Party, which the State Department has designated as a foreign terrorist organization. The PKK is making war on Turkey, a NATO member. So, again, when a lot of people talk about the Kurds as though the Kurds are some coherent grouping, they're not right now. We need to be specific and say, what Kurds are we talking about? But if your larger question is, how much more can this spin out of control? A lot. That's one of the things that the Russian escalation meant, that the war is getting a lot larger. That's one of the things that the attacks in Paris meant. The war is getting a lot larger. It's getting more dangerous. And what did we see happen? We saw an exchange. You know, we saw a Russian frigate, I believe, firing on a Turkish ship in the Bosphorus. You know, what happens if the Turks close the Bosphorus? I mean, that's as far as I believe that this is this is an act of war, if they close down the Bosphorus to Russian shipping. So, yeah, it can certainly get much worse, and this is something else I've been writing about for more than the last 4 years. This war, this conflict can get extremely large. So it's not just about the regional actors it's pulling in, it's about the international actors it's pulling in as well.
Hello, this is Mark Hess again. I appreciate you taking a second question from me. Briefly, there was a story, I saw Eli Lake covering it and others in the last several days about Iran decreasing its footprint in Syria. The story has also been challenged. So I wonder if you have any thoughts about, number one, whether the information is accurate, or whether it's perhaps part of a spin, and if so, who might be advancing that? And then also, as kind of a side issue, Iran and Syria, you mentioned Qasem Soleimani, so I have to ask, what do you think his status is now? Thank you.
You mean if I think Soleimani is alive or dead, or what?
Oh, yeah, that's fine, alive, dead, maimed, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there were reports, which I saw today, that he's back in Moscow visiting Putin and others. So, I mean, this is from the Iranian press. I don't know. There's lots of stuff in the Iranian press. Did you take it for what it's worth? Is it accurate? I don't know. I haven't seen pictures. We'll wait till we see pictures. From my understanding, the proof of life pictures that we've seen of Soleimani are questionable, to say the least. So we'll see. As far as whether or not the... Pardon me?
I said we can hope.
Yeah, we can hope, definitely. The IRGC or the Iranians withdrawing troops, I'll be careful how I comment on this to say I think there are different actors across the international community who have different reasons to put out such a message. Some of those actors have good intentions, some of them have bad intentions, right? From the American perspective, or rather from the White House's perspective, it makes the White House look very good. That because this is what they've been saying, right? Oh, good, the Russians are entering a quagmire, and look, the Iranians can't handle it. So it makes them look good, the White House. From an Israeli perspective, it projects Israeli confidence rather than Israeli concern and fear. We don't have exact numbers on Iranian troop deployments. Do people actually know what the numbers look like? I mean, if anyone knows, I suspect the Israelis have a pretty good idea. But again, they have different reasons for putting out that message than the White House does. And look, I mean, who knows if they did reduce their deployment? We have no idea why that might have happened. Is it because the Iranians are scared? No. Again, the Assad regime is a major, it's a vital Iranian interest, as they've been very clear about it for a long time. Who knows? Maybe it's because they help. Maybe it's because now the Russians, the French, and the Americans are all involved in a campaign against ISIS. And they feel good. Yalla, we'll bring some of our boys back home. We'll stop bleeding. Let the French bomb ISIS positions, and we can focus on other, you know, other Assad rebel units. And by the way, notice that the United States and the Russians, they're not just going after ISIS positions. The United States has been going after lots of different Sunni group positions. So it's not just that they're attacking ISIS. And we know that the Russians are barely attacking ISIS. So maybe part of that Russian, or rather, bringing some of the Iranians back home, if that's happening, if it's happening, that might be part of the reason. Because the Iranians feel they can get away with a little lighter footprint now that other people are picking up part of the burden. But again, how much do we know that's true? Who does it, who does it help out? Those are interesting questions.
Okay, thank you. Well, this will be our last question. So, caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when you hear that your line is unmuted.
Yes, Ali, this is Jerry Stern calling.
Hi.
My question has to do with several comments you made during your presentation and in your response to questions that United States should cut down Iran to size. I think we all agree that that kind of thing won't happen for the next year, and it only is likely if there's a Republican in the White House in January of 2017. But let's say that does happen. Could you give us any specifics on what you have in mind for what you would define as cutting down to size?
I think the first thing is, the first thing is toppling Assad. I think that's key. I think pushing back against the Iranians in Syria. Again, it's going to be much harder to do now with the Russians. It's going to mean going against the Russians in Syria. So I think that's going to be a delicate issue, but I think that's important. We have security cooperation with Iranian assets throughout the region. I mean, we are in many ways with in Iraq, for instance, we've been the IRGC Quds Forces Air Force, right? There's no way Qasem Soleimani retakes the Crete with Iraq when takes the Crete with the Iraqi Shia militias without U.S. air support. So I certainly think that intelligence coordination, I certainly think that waging a war against ISIS alongside the Iranians, I think all that has to stop. I think that this is a terrible idea. So I think that, between toppling Assad and between no more military coordination and security cooperation with the Iranians, all of that has to stop. We've cooperated with them. We share intelligence with them in Lebanon. With Hezbollah through the Lebanese armed forces. So, I think those are the first most obvious steps. Stop coordinating with them and push down Assad.
We're reaching the end of our conference call, and the Middle East Forum extends its thanks to Lee Smith for his briefing and to our participants for calling in today. This concludes our conference call.